Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production from iHeartRadio. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio. And how the tech are you? You know, pretty soon I plan to do an episode about the concept of Web3. Or Web 3.0. And those terms have a lot of buzz around them. There's also some competing definitions, which is fun for something that's kind of still in the process of coalescing. But that might make you wonder, you know, what the heck was Web 2.0? Or even Web 1.0? And I have covered this on very old episodes of Tech Stuff, but I thought it would be good to do a tidbits episode on the topic. So here is Tech Stuff Tidbits, Web 1 and Web 2. And first of all, there really was no Web 1.0, at least not formally. And in fact, you could argue the same for Web 2.0, really. During the earliest days of the web, there was no one there to say, this is version 1.0. Like, you had version numbers for the various protocols, but the web itself we did not designate as being Web 1. It was just, you know, the web. It was just a thing. Kind of like how during the First World War, no one called it World War 1, because that would be cynical and pessimistic. I mean, it also would have been accurate, but at the time, the more hopeful humans out there were kind of crossing their fingers that there wouldn't be another, you know, war to end all wars, like another global conflict similar to World War 1, sadly. There was, but, you know, at the time they weren't thinking that. So in the beginning, it was just the web, you know, just websites with web pages. The first website was launched on August 6th, 1991. And it was, in fact, a website about the World Wide Web project itself from Tim Berners-Lee, the person who invented the web, effectively. And it listed instructions on how to create web pages and to use hypertext to link documents, that is, pages, together. And that would allow visitors to navigate from one page to another. The term Web 2.0 wouldn't emerge until nearly a decade later, in 1999. And it was a writer named Darcy DiNucci who coined the term in a paper titled Fragmented Future, or an article titled Fragmented Future. By the way, you can find that article online. You can read it for free. And I highly recommend you do it. It's, you know, it's a historical document at this point, but it's incredible to see how much Darcy was predicting that actually became a thing. Darcy's thesis was that the web at that stage in 1999 was about to go through a truly transformational evolution, and in fact was already in the process of doing so. And let's cast our minds back to the early web. And you may, oh my droogies, not remember what that was like. Things changing so scory now and people think quick to forget. But, you know, back in the early days of the web, web pages were static. Like, you would set out to build a web page. It would probably look a bit like a page in a book. And once you were done, chances were that's just how it was going to be until either, you know, whatever machine was hosting the file crashed and the file was no longer available, or, you know, you deleted it to put something else up or whatever. So visiting the web was a lot like flipping through the pages of a book. Or, you know, you might want to be more accurate. Say, like, the pages in a series of magazines that had all been stapled together and shuffled up. And the stuff on the pages might be really interesting, or it might be really informative, or really entertaining. It could be a list of great jokes, but the fact was, those pages didn't change, right? The content on that page on day one would be exactly the same on day 100, and the same on day 1000. So you would probably just go to the page once to learn something, and chances are you'd never return again. There'd be no reason to. There'd be nothing new there. And so the experience of the web had really limited interactivity. Mostly it was confined to clicking on any active links that were on a page and then going to some other similarly static page. So it was an incredible achievement, an amazing tool, but it was still, especially when you look at what the web is now, limited in abilities and scope. And Darcy's point was that the web could and would do much, much more. Now, the reason that that could even happen was actually due to the convergence of many things. And all of those things were made possible because of the foundation of the basic protocols, or sets of rules, if you prefer. That's what protocols are. They are just kind of like instructions or rule sets. Anyway, there are some basic protocols that support the internet in general and the web in particular. So for those protocols, you've got the hypertext protocol, or HTTP, very important for the web. This is the protocol that allows things like the linking of documents together. And you've also got a pair of protocols called TCP/IP, and that governs how files move across networks and across the internet. So these protocols, coupled with the Uniform Resource Locator, or URL, that was really important too. The URL denotes a specific file's location on a network. So that way, when you are clicking a link in your browser to take you to another page, the browser can actually call up that page because the URL has the location. Otherwise, you know, you wouldn't know what computer was hosting that particular page, and nothing would happen. You know, you would just be searching for something. But all of these different things made the web stuff possible, and those would not change. I mean, they would evolve, but they wouldn't become a totally new thing. So Web 2.0 would not involve overhauling the bedrock of the web itself. It wasn't about scrapping what came before and building something new. It was more about kind of changing the features that you would find on websites themselves. So we had these other technologies that were enhancing the web experience. There were new markup languages. There were new versions of HTML, like dynamic HTML. There were new protocols that allowed for streaming media, like streaming audio and streaming video. There were enhancements that allowed for, again, like dynamic elements on the web pages themselves. So a page could have something that could update over and over again, which also meant that there would be reasons for people to return to that same page over and over again, because it wouldn't be the exact same thing they had seen when they came on day one. In addition, there could be elements that would let people interact either with the websites themselves or with one another or both. And that set the stage for stuff like user-generated content and social network platforms. So this kind of interactivity could be as simple as like leaving a message on a comments page or like a review on a commerce site like Amazon. Or it could be as complicated as uploading a video to a host website and attracting people to watch that video. There was also the steady improvement in data transfer speeds that was really important, because without that, then these more rich experiences would take so much time to install and to consume that they wouldn't do any good. Like, if you're told, oh, there's going to be this great web page, you're just going to have to wait 45 minutes for it to load, chances are you're not going to invest that time for that experience. So all of these different elements were critical to making the next phase of the web a possibility. Now, on top of all this, Darcy's hypothesis included some really forward-thinking stuff, like the fact that we would see web connectivity extend beyond desktop computers and laptops, and we would see examples like web-connected televisions and car dashboards and mobile game devices. Darcy even talked about web-connected phones, and this was in the era before we started seeing serious smartphones. This is 1999. Remember, the iPhone doesn't come out till 2007. So essentially, Darcy was predicting a mobile and modular web, complete with advocating for websites that would render in such a way as to be optimized for the end device. Darcy was saying that's going to be absolutely necessary, that it would be impractical and self-defeating if you had a one-size-fits-all web layout, because the experience on a device like a handheld device would be totally different from that from a desktop. And now we have entire companies that are based around that idea, right? You have companies like Squarespace, where they create layouts that have that capability of sizing and emphasizing web pages properly dependent upon what platform you're using to view the website. Darcy was foreseeing all this. In fact, Darcy even gave us a very early glimpse at the concept of the Internet of Things. So again, really, really great article. I mean, I've made predictions in tech before. I have never been that savvy and that accurate. It's pretty bold. Now, in hindsight, of course, we can say, yeah, that's where it went. I mean, it makes sense. Obviously, that's where it was going to go. But at the time, Darcy's predictions weren't necessarily rock solid. I mean, one big reason for that is 99 was at the height of the first hype cycle for the web. I'll explain what I mean when we come back from these messages.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gaginian. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, 1999. Now, in the early years of the web, it took a while for the web to really kind of take off, partly because in the earliest days of the web, there were regulations in place that prevented the commercial use of the internet. Once those were lifted, things would start to change. And by the late 90s, pretty much every company and every organization out there had become convinced that they needed to have a web presence to be competitive and effective into the next century. So new companies that leveraged the web as a fundamental part of their business also popped up, right? Not just companies saying, how can we use the web to do what we do now, but better? But there were brand new companies that said, what can the web, you know, what opportunities does the web give us to do business? Now, some of those companies really didn't even have business plans per se. They might have had a vision of what they might be able to provide thanks to the powers of the web. But when it came to an actual plan to generate revenue, a lot of these companies fell pretty short of that goal. It was really a digital gold rush and land grab all wrapped up together, and people were pouring billions of dollars into it. And as we know now, that trend at the time was unsustainable. It would turn out that a lot of those startups that first appeared in those early days were incapable of generating enough revenue to support themselves. So in some cases, companies were scaling far too quickly, and once they scaled to a certain size, their expenses were so great that they were spending more money than they were bringing in. But in a few other cases, and these were high-profile ones, and unfortunately, it really kind of cast a shadow over the web in general, you had these starry-eyed web company founders who were spending ludicrous amounts of money on lavish offices and amenities and, you know, paying themselves this crazy salary using investments, and they weren't really using the investment money to actually establish a working business. And once the money ran out, then the companies were folding. Meanwhile, you had employees who were jumping from job to job because they were attracted by lavish benefits packages. I would also say lavish salaries, but in many cases, the compensation largely came in the form of stock options or actual shares of the company itself. And yes, that can be incredibly valuable if your company hits the big time or if some other company decides to acquire it and then you get paid out for your equity in the company. That can be huge. But if a company falters, well, then there's a good chance your stock's not going to be worth the paper it's printed on. And unfortunately, that happened a lot. So the dot-com bubble burst in the early 2000s. That was the initial burst. The spring of 2000 saw stock prices take a massive hit in the tech sector as Japan entered into an economic recession, and that kind of precipitated this global response. And there was an increased amount of attention paid to how a lot of internet companies were burning through their initial investment cash way too quickly, with no way to generate revenue. So unless they were going to get regular injections of investment cash, they just couldn't stick around because there was nothing to pay for operations. Then the following year, the terrorist attacks in the United States on September 11th, 2001, that caused another big drop in the stock market. And at that point, companies that were already kind of on the brink folded, and it was incredibly bleak. But some companies were able to weather the storm. So companies like Amazon made it through just barely. And I've talked about that story in a previous episode of Tech Stuff. I believe it might have been on Business on the Brink. But either way, Amazon's survival of the dot-com bubble was really more down to luck than anything else. eBay was another site that made it through the dot-com bubble. And of course, there were others. Now, flash forward to 2004. The tech industry was kind of on the road to recovery. There were people who were actually kind of eager to look ahead at this point. Like, there was a lot of damage control and triage in the wake of the dot-com bubble burst. But by 2004, we had kind of rounded the corner on that. And that's when a media company called O'Reilly, founded by Tim O'Reilly, planned a conference with the name the Web 2.0 Conference. And this is really where the term Web 2.0 became famous. So again, Darcy had invented the phrase 5 years earlier, but it was this conference in 2004 where it really became a buzzword. And I would argue that Web 2.0 took on an additional meaning at this conference, and that would be that the strategies that some companies like Amazon had been using that helped, or at least appeared to help, get them through the dot-com bubble burst and survive were ones that related to Web 2.0. So the implication I got was that features like dynamic elements and support for user-generated content, the incorporation of other interactive elements, and the use of web-based media were what set the survivors of the dot-com bubble burst apart from other companies that failed to attract a lot of traffic and make it through. And there's definitely some truth to that. I mean, I sometimes get the feeling the message was, hey, those companies that didn't make it through the dot-com bubble were holding too tightly onto the old Web 1.0 way. But that's not necessarily true. There were companies that were part of the many that folded that had Web 2.0 features to them. So you couldn't just point to this and say, if you were Web 1.0, you failed, because not all Web 1.0 sites went away. And if you were Web 2.0, you survived, because not all of those were true either. Now, I also admit that this could be just my own misinterpretation of the messaging here. It just felt like that was kind of what the point was, that like in order to really thrive, you need to be Web 2.0. But, you know, you can get pretty cynical when you sift through a lot of marketing buzz speak. So that might just be my own, you know, me bringing baggage to it. Anyway, this is where Web 2.0 really took off as a definition, and you can definitely see how stuff like dynamic elements and incorporation of media and social interactivity and all those sort of things have become the underpinnings for much of the web today. From social networking sites to gaming to news to commerce, it's pretty common to encounter some or even all of these features. So Darcy was on point, I'm telling you. Now, when it comes to Web 3 or Web 3.0, that definition depends upon whom you're talking to. There's the Tim Berners-Lee version of Web 3.0. He's, again, the guy who invented the web. And his vision of Web 3.0 is a machine-readable web, or the so-called semantic web. With the semantic web, each person's experience would be customized, tailored, if you will, to their own behaviors and needs. And we actually see elements of this already taking form in things like recommendation engines, where on shopping sites, media sites, or social networking sites start giving you recommended things to look at. However, extend that sort of thing to your total experience on the web and you get closer to what Tim Berners-Lee vision was. And it would be a web that would respond instantly to your needs and provide you with the results you want, assuming it was working properly. And then there's the other definition, the more recent one, which dates to, you know, around 2014 or so. And to be fair, most people don't actually refer to it as Web 3.0. They call it just Web 3, with no space between the B in web and the numeral 3. This version isn't about the semantic web. It's more about relying on blockchain technology to underlie a future version of the web so that the web would actually be built on top of blockchain. This is the future that crypto enthusiasts and NFT fans really get excited about, and one in which there would be like a token-based economy and a decentralized approach to the web, at least in theory. But as I said, I'll have to do a full episode about what Web3 really means and what it might really look like in the future, and question about is it truly decentralized or not. Spoiler alert, I am a skeptic. But for now, that's a quick refresher on what Web 1.0, which really wasn't defined until that era was coming to an end, and Web 2.0 actually are. And again, in the future, I'll tackle Web 3. Now, if you have suggestions for topics I should tackle on Tech Stuff, let me know on Twitter. The handle for the show is TechStuffHSW. I look forward to hearing from you, and I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is an iHeartRadio production. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.